You're listening to the RBN Energy Blogcast. This is an audio version of RBN Energy's daily blog, the oil and gas industry's go-to source for insight. Every day, we cover commodity fundamentals, industry changes, and developing trends across energy markets. And now, we're making it easier than ever to enjoy our blogs. Whether it's on your drive into work, while you're at the office, or at home walking the dog, settle in, turn the volume up, and enjoy.
Monday, July 5th, 2021. What a fool believes. Will crude oil hit $100 a barrel? Published by Gil Johnson. After the crude oil price crash in the spring of 2020 and flat $1.40 per barrel oil last summer and early fall, prices for both WTI and Brent have been increasing steadily the past several months, and now stand at a kind of remarkable $75 per barrel. This rise has been driven by a combination of demand recovery and supply restraint from both OPEC Plus and U.S. producers, which begs the questions, what's next on the supply and demand fronts? And how much more will oil prices increase from here? There's been a lot of chatter lately that we might see $100 per barrel crude prices sometime soon, and there are a lot of interested parties, many of whom don't normally see eye to eye, who, one reason or another, see their interests converge around the $100 per barrel mark. The only problem is, it's not showing up in the forward curve. Today, we look at the potential for Benjamin a barrel oil and how it might play out. For most of us, 4th of July this year was a heck of a lot more social and fun than last year. COVID-19 lockdowns, mask wearing, and a general sense of anxiety had just about everyone in a funk. No doubt, there's a lot of reason for optimism nowadays. These high hopes have even extended to the energy sector too. Demand for gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel are up among developed nations and the U.S. in particular. Last Friday, heading into the holiday weekend, U.S. gasoline and diesel prices soared to their highest level in 7 years, and U.S. refiners are running hard to keep pace, with refinery utilization up to 93% recently. Crude oil production has been increasing more slowly than demand, however, resulting in inventory draws and higher prices for crude and refined products. The modest measured gain in production is partly by design. The members of OPEC, led by Saudi Arabia, along with Russia, or OPEC Plus, have been uncharacteristically disciplined in ratcheting up their crude oil output, and have been rewarded by steadily higher prices. We'll come back to that topic a bit later. First, before we consider the potential for the first $100 barrel of crude since July 2014, 7 years ago this month, we should take a quick look back at how we got to where we are today. If we hit the rewind button to 2019, from the outside looking in, the oil industry still seemed relatively healthy. The economy was riding high, for the most part, and WTI's average cash settlement for the fourth quarter of 2019 was $57 per barrel. That price is lower than where WTI stands today and was nothing to write home about in the context of prices frequently experienced in the years prior to 2015 and major shale oil growth, but it was still a manageable foundation for E&Ps to run profitable businesses. However, even at that time, before the COVID and the early 2020 OPEC Plus dispute that caused crude oil prices to tumble, the cracks had already begun to appear in the oil patch, and we said so at the time and can't afford to love you. Now, fast forward through the depths of COVID and the series of unfortunate events that pushed the price of WTI into negative territory for the first time ever, which we chronicled in several blogs, including Wipeout and One Way Out, the oil market finds itself back by popular demand, albeit somewhat begrudgingly in some cases. See Paradise, Part 2. Should 2019's fundamental supply and demand imbalances re-emerge, so would the cracks we noted in the market back then. But while there definitely are substantial long-term headwinds, there is also a lot of bullish pressure. Sure, the ever-increasing environmental concerns are probably here to stay, but, in the near term, the world still runs on gasoline and diesel, and that isn't going to change overnight. Which brings us to the question of the day: what would it take for crude oil to rise to $100 per barrel? Well, there are several forces at work here, each with their own complications and caveats, that figure into the overall equation. At the most basic level, supply and demand fundamentals will ultimately dictate the clearing price of crude. From a U.S. perspective, the key issue is whether domestic production will increase relative to the aforementioned high refinery demand. There are other unknowns too, such as whether OPEC Plus can maintain limits on production and if Iran can work out a deal to end trade sanctions against it. On the demand side, things are possibly even more uncertain. The question remains of when, if ever, the world economy fully emerges from the pandemic has kept crude oil traders bouncing between bullish and bearish sentiments. Inflation, whether transitory or not and to what degree, will also continue to affect prices. And, when federal stimulus and unemployment support run out, will the economy be able to stand on its own or will it be shaky to start? One more query to the $100 per barrel bulls. If prices are headed higher, why is the forward curve for crude backwardated? These factors are going to need unpacking, but at least one thing is certain. Refined product demand is back in the US. It may not be fully back to 2018-19 levels, but it sure is a lot better than in the weeks and months after COVID hit. The difference between supply and demand must be balanced by storage injections or withdrawals. While this 2.5 million barrels per day gap will not perfectly match commercial inventory changes due to balancing items and strategic petroleum reserve, or SPR activity, it confirms that supply and demand remain out of whack. The takeaway here is that, with demand exceeding supply, U.S. stocks, excluding the SPR, have been drawing down since last summer and are now 81 million barrels lower than their 533 million barrels level a year ago. It would be logical to ask, with such a tight market, why have exports remained so high? The main reason relates to the quantity of lighter-grade U.S.-produced crude, which has surged in the shale era versus what can be efficiently run in domestic refineries. Check out refined, piped, delivered, they're yours. Many refineries that added capacity in the early 2000s had pre-shale revolution expectations for crude availability. Thus, refiners, especially in the Gulf Coast region, optimized their operations for refining heavier and sour crude sourced from international markets. Today, though there has been some reconfiguration based on market developments, those complex Gulf Coast refineries still have an appetite that includes a lot of heavier crude to maximize their throughput and profitability. On the other hand, many less complex international refineries need lighter, sweeter crude similar to what the U.S. now produces a lot of in order to maximize their refinery margins without overproducing sulfurous refined products or lower value resid and bottoms. So the continuing pattern of swapping domestic for international barrels actually makes sense. With U.S. refinery demand up, if reduced exports aren't the answer, what about increased production? Well, despite the gung-ho drill baby drill attitude many U.S. producers lived by in previous boom and bust cycles, publicly owned U.S. E&Ps seem to have found religion. With more focus on reducing debt and increasing shareholder returns rather than on new production, public companies are now showing restraint in producing into higher crude prices. On the other hand, privately held companies are only at the mercy of their credit facilities or private equity, and many of them have been using their relative freedom to take advantage of higher prices. Two major indicators of U.S. oil and gas production are the number of rigs operating and the corresponding number of wells that they bring online. While rig counts in the big producing basins, including the Permian, are still at just over half of their pre-COVID levels, they have been steadily climbing. On top of that, we've also been seeing a boost in production from previously drilled but uncompleted wells, or DUCs, which belies the overall rig count. As the inventory of DUCs drops, the number of new crude-producing wells may rise faster than the rig count would otherwise indicate. Since last summer, the total number of DUCs has dropped from just under 9,000 to around 6,500 as of May 2021, a decline of about 27%. By far the biggest decrease in DUCs has been experienced in the Permian, which has pulled over 1,000 DUCs out of inventory in the last year. That signals to us that U.S. production may be poised to increase substantially in the near future. But, even then, producers may have a hard time keeping pace with rising demand. And there's another implied question in the will they or won't they surrounding public versus private U.S. producers, and that's the various motivations of stakeholders in the oil price saga. In other words, who stands to benefit if crude oil does reach $100 per barrel? The short answer, there are a lot of influential contingents who would like to see it happen. There would be some excited folks on both the pro-market and green sides of the fence. Those directly involved in, and strategically focused on the production, transportation, and marketing of crude oil would welcome the strong prices, of course. But, paradoxically, high crude prices may accelerate the shift to low or no carbon energy sources by making them more economically competitive. Nothing like $5 per gal gasoline to make someone start looking at the all-electric F-150 Lightning, and, of course, there is the political posturing where those demanding a faster energy transition can now leverage higher prices to find renewed support for energy alternatives. And right behind them would be the politicians casting blame on the opposing party for higher energy prices and the policies that preceded them. The only losers in this situation are consumers, who could end up paying substantially higher prices at the pump, and maybe the broader economy too. There are also macroeconomic conditions and monetary policy unknowns. The U.S. crude oil market is not an island, as we noted earlier. It is closely linked to international markets through imports and exports. Because international crude oil benchmarks like Brent are traded in US dollars, a weakening dollar means that more of them must be spent to acquire the same value of crude, which provides support for oil prices. And, for right now at least, the US is experiencing more inflation than it's seen in a while. Have you shopped for plywood or chicken or copper wire lately? And that price pressure must be weighed against expectations of if or when the US Federal Reserve might respond by raising interest rates, which leads into yet another macro question: how stable will the economy be once expanded unemployment benefits expire? The answer to that question will affect the demand for refined products, which goes right back to crude oil. Regardless of what ends up happening, the uncertainty regarding the economy taking off its training wheels post-COVID is going to affect energy markets as a whole. While U.S. fundamentals are a focal point, ultimately, the domestic oil market's fate is inextricably tied to the global market. On the supply side, OPEC plus supply management and the potential for the reintroduction of Iranian barrels dominate most of the conversation these days. Last Thursday, July 1, OPEC plus, led by Saudi Arabia and Russia, seemed ready to agree to increase production by 400,000 barrels per day a month through 2022, which would unwind 5.8 million barrels per day of remaining production cuts from the cartel and keep global crude pricing at a level attractive to members. But that plan hit a snag when the United Arab Emirates, or UAE, refused to go along with the planned increase, angling for a higher baseline production level for themselves. The result was that OPEC Plus was unable to come to a resolution when they met again yesterday and further talks were called off. Of course, additional negotiations could yield a different result sooner or later, but, for now it appears that this development will result in no new OPEC Plus deal regarding production increases, which could be a bullish sign for the price of crude unless members choose to disregard the previously agreed upon cuts. Apart from the geopolitical discord between Saudi Arabia and UAE, complicating their assessment of the timing and magnitude of supply increases was perhaps the biggest unknown: how quickly different parts of the world will rebound from COVID. As we noted previously, while developed countries have shown sharp rebounds in demand, major growth economies such as India continue to be roiled by the pandemic, and China's demand has also lagged as it deals with aftershocks. Additionally, according to the latest COVID case counts, Latin America, a prime export market for U.S. refined products, remains a problem area. One final piece of the equation we need to consider in deciding whether or not we buy the $100 per barrel oil story is to just look at the forward curve. If prices for crude oil a few months from now are lower than they are today, why should we believe $100 oil is just around the corner? But there are a few reasons why the forward curve can be misleading. First, producers often want to lock in a price for their commodities, and so they hedge production out on the curve, further than most refiners who can use storage and downstream markets as ballast against higher feedstock costs. As a result, there tends to be a surplus of sellers, which gives buyers bargaining power and often leads to a backwardation bias of some degree. As evidence of that, the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, or CFTC, publishes snapshots of net positions by trader type and commodity, and hedge funds have been pouring money into WTI and Brent in the past month, marking the largest aggregate long position since 2018. So where does all this leave us regarding the prospects for $100 oil? If U.S. producers remain subdued and the members of OPEC Plus continue to limit incremental production, there is a distinct possibility crude oil prices will continue to climb. Further, if inflation persists and the economy continues to run hot, there could be even more space for prices to run. The only catch is that fundamentals change as prices do. Privately backed U.S. producers have already jumped back into the mix. Publicly held E&Ps may not decide to drill right now, but if they can hedge out a good stretch of $80 per barrel plus prices, their shareholders might be willing to let off the reins and increase supply in the process. At the same time, OPEC Plus does not want prices to get too high for too long for fear that might spur another recession or, perhaps worse in their view, encourage U.S. producers to go all out on production. But even then, the potential supply increase would not come overnight. The bottom line is that there are enough bullish factors and interested parties to support crude touching $100 per barrel, but if it does, supply and demand fundamentals suggest to us that it probably wouldn't stay that high for long. What a Fool Believes was written by Michael McDonald and Kenny Loggins. Kenny Loggins released his version of the song on his album Nightwatch 5 months prior to the Doobie Brothers releasing their better-known version of the song. It appears as the second song on side one of the Doobie Brothers' 8th studio album, Minute by Minute. The Doobie Brothers released it as a single in January 1979, and it went to number one on the Billboard Hot 100 Singles chart. The song received Grammy Awards in 1980 for Song of the Year and Record of the Year. It has been certified gold by the Recording Industry Association of America, or RIAA. Personnel on the record were Michael McDonald on lead, backing vocals, keyboards, and synthesizers, Patrick Simmons, Jeff Skunk Baxter on guitar, Teron Porter on bass, Keith Newson, Ted Templeman on drums, Bill Payne on synthesizer, and Bobby Lockhind on congas. Minute by Minute was recorded during 1978 at Warner Brothers Recording Studios in North Hollywood and Sunset Sound in Los Angeles, with Ted Templeman producing. Released in December 1978, it went to number one on the Billboard Top 200 Albums chart. The LP has been certified 3X Platinum by the RIAA. It received a Grammy Award for Best Pop Vocal Performance by a Duo or Group in 1980. Three singles were released from the album. The Doobie Brothers are an American rock band formed in San Jose, California, in 1970. 37 members have passed through the band since its formation over 5 decades ago. The current membership includes founding members Patrick Simmons and Tom Johnston, along with Michael McDonald, John McPhee, John Cowan, Mark Russo, Bill Payne, and Mark Quinones. The band has released 14 studio albums, 6 live albums, 9 compilation albums, and 36 singles and has sold more than 40 million records worldwide. The Doobie Brothers are members of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and the vocal group Hall of Fame. They continue to record and tour, with their 50th anniversary tour resuming in August 2021.
This has been the RBN Energy Blogcast. Thanks for listening.